This is Jason Odell, and welcome to The Image Doctors, part of the Nikonians Talk Radio podcast series. This is episode number 46 for August 2nd, 2007.
Yeah, and welcome. I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks for joining us today, and we've got a long topic, which is we'll spend most of our time on today, and we decided we would talk about shooting at relatively high ISOs. And this topic covers a whole range of subtopics, so
it's going to be a long one.
It'll be a long one, yeah.
And so of course, if you have a choice and you're having trouble sleeping lately, this may be a good one to listen to before you go to bed.
Yeah, if you're in your car right now, consider turning us up. Pull us out.
Seriously, hopefully this will help with something that we hear a lot about, which is noise issues and stuff like that.
There's a lot of noise about noise.
There is.
So that's our main topic for the day. We'll break it into different components, things you can do, setting up your camera, post-processing, etc. We'll also have our weekly photo prescription for you this week. And so let's start talking about, we always say the first rule of thumb with shooting is shoot as low as an ISO as you can get away with.
Right. So before we go into this topic, we'll just throw out the obvious, which is what every photographer would dearly love, is for the results to look the same at ISO 100 as they do at 1600 or 3200 or 6400. And we're not there yet, for digital cameras. I'm sure it'll keep improving and we'll see some cool things over the next year. But right now there is a little bit of a difference. Now, before we start getting into all the obsessive compulsive disorder kind of topics that we're going to get into here soon and tell you how to dial in noise reduction so you get the optimal image, we'll just put out a plea here first, which is
sanity check time.
Yeah. Before you waste a whole lot of time fine tuning noise reduction and sharpening, which is always a related topic, make sure you've really got a problem for the kind of images that you're making. And what I mean by that is, if your normal workflow is to make images that are around 11 by 14 or 13 by 19 or whatever, make some honest-to-God prints. Don't just look at the 100% view on Photoshop or whatever. Make real prints that are the kind of things that you're going to normally do and see if you have a problem. You very well may not.
You'd
a lot
surprised.
Of things that look nasty at 100% look beautiful at normal print sizes. So make sure you have a problem first. Don't just conclude there is one.
Yeah, and typically that means looking at your image in Photoshop, at a 33 to 50% range is more realistic. But again, like Rick says, make the real print.
Yeah.
Because even on the screen, you might still see stuff that doesn't show up in your print. Mm-hmm. Before we start jumping into high ISO, for our beginners out there, what are we talking about when we're talking about ISO? Well, that's the sensitivity of the sensor. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about exposure. And, one way to get a faster shutter speed is to open up the aperture of your lens. At some point, you reach the maximum aperture that your lens has. And so the only other way to increase the shutter speed at that point would be to increase the sensitivity of the sensor to light. Mm-hmm. And the ISO settings in your camera, they're derived from the ISO settings from film. That's what they're based on. Usually the bottom value is either 100 or 200, depending on the camera that you have. And then they move in one-stop increments. So as you double the ISO number, you get one-stop faster shutter speed. So if you shot at, if you had a meter reading of 1/30th of a second at ISO 100, and you went to ISO 200, you'd now have a 60th of a second for that same aperture and increase all the way up. So the difference in each ISO rating is generally full stops. Some of the Nikon cameras will let you adjust these in third or stops or half stop increments, but the normal progression is 100, 200, 400, 800, 1600, and so on. It doubles.
Right. Now, with Nikon digital SLRs, what you'll find is that there's a sequence of ISO numbers, and then you reach this point where now they're not a number, but they're now a thing called maybe high one or high two. And the way to interpret those are, one-stop higher ISOs. So if on your camera it goes up to 800 and then goes to high one, it's ISO 1600, in fact. but there's a reason that they're labeled a little bit differently. And what it usually means is at that point, the results get a little bit nastier.
Not yeah, they're
necessarily
not really
terrible,
in spec.
But you know, they're not as clean as they were at ISO 800. So it's just a kind of a mental note that it's going to get a little bit worse, and you may have to do some different things potentially in to make prints.
Yeah, when
we talked about
the auto ISO setting, for example, the camera will not automatically select high one or high two. You have to tell it to do that, mm-hmm. because you're telling the camera, hey, I'm willing to live with the results. It's going to be a little bit out of spec.
Yeah.
So that's the concept of what you're doing. And so you use this in situations. The biggest problem with high ISO shooting is when you use it. Because most of the time, you're using it in really cruddy lighting conditions in the first
right.
place, which aren't conducive to good images to begin with. And so it's really important in those situations to expose properly and get your white balance set properly, because
Absolutely.
All of these things are going to affect your image. Let's face it, even in a normal indoor room, if there's not a lot of light coming in, with a normal lens, your standard kit zoom lens possibly, which might be an f3.5 to 4.5, even at ISO 1600, your shutter speeds are going to be down around a 30th of a second. They're not particularly fast. And so we're always trying to eke out as much shutter speed as we can get. But then we take our cameras into these situations where it's fairly dark. Maybe it's at a play for your kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there might be some spotlights. Maybe it's inside the gym at the basketball where it's, you know, awful lighting because it's not even natural light. It's artificial lighting with strange white balance issues. So a lot of times when you see high ISO, you're also seeing it used in situations that are just bad for photography to begin with.
Right. Now, one brief comment there is, if you're in a situation, let's say you're taking pictures of your kids at home or something like that, always a popular subject, and you're doing it indoors, think about whether or not you couldn't pull out your tripod and shoot it at a lower ISO. You very well may get better shots doing that. So don't just, you know, go the lazy approach, leave the tripod in the closet, shoot handheld. You might be able to use it, in fact, and then not even have the issue of high ISO.
Or plan B is bring light to the party. Mm-hmm. If the light isn't at the party, bring your own, use your flash.
Right.
And I know sometimes you can't do that. But there's a reason why the Sports Illustrated photographers in basketball arenas use strobes.
Right.
Period, the end. You just don't get, no camera produces, you just don't get enough shutter speed. Nobody can shoot at 1/8,000th of a second, which is like the duration of some of those strobes.
Right.
In normal available light shooting.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. So now let's say you're in a situation where you know you can't use a flash, you probably can't use a tripod. Maybe you're indoors somewhere. Maybe you're at a show or a play or something. You want to expose correctly. And this is probably the most critical thing you can do when shooting at high ISOs.
Yeah, we briefly mentioned this topic a few episodes back where we were talking about handheld meters and how those, you know, if used correctly, can benefit you in terms of noise. And the key thing, I think, is, like you were saying, expose correctly. Don't get into a situation where you make a shot and it looks a little bit underexposed, and in your post-processing, you have to adjust the mid-tones, you know, and that happens usually via something called brightness or, you know, some sort of a levels adjustment where you're moving that mid-tone slider and brightening the images. Whenever you're having to do that, that usually means that you didn't expose correctly.
Yeah,
and you'll get more noise.
If you're moving that mid-tone slider to the left, it means your image, you're trying to brighten it up. So one way you can get around this is to, well, first of all, start to learn how to recognize neutral tones and use your spot meter in your camera.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you can spot meter off something, and if it's very dark, chances are you're spot metering off of something that's brighter than neutral tone. Mm-hmm. So you'll spot meter that and then open up a stop.
Now, let's talk about, you know, we both did some example mm-hmm. shots and prints in preparation for the podcast, and you had one where you had a kind of a still life scene on your table, candle lit, very romantic, really.
Yeah, some nice.
With some bananas, of course.
Exactly, very romantic.
Chiquita bananas, you know, the classic I think a painter thing from the 18th century, as I recall.
Somewhere around my house, you know, Carmen Miranda is looking for her hat.
No doubt.
But
in that case, you were metering out with a spot meter off the bananas, and those are kind of a light yellow color. So
correct.
You dialed in a plus one mm-hmm. exposure compensation.
And it was interesting because when I used matrix metering, my matrix meter tends to preserve highlight detail. That's just
right.
how it's designed, because in digital, as we've talked about before, if you lose highlight detail, it's generally gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week we talked about highlight recovery. So you're in many of the Nikon digital SLRs, your matrix meter is a little bit biased to the left already.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's true with cameras like the D2X and the D2XS, the D70, the D100, the D200, a bunch of them.
Right. The only ones that I think are a little bit less like that are the D80 and the D40.
Right.
And maybe the D50, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where the matrix metering will...
I think that one's probably more like a D70.
Yeah, I think
general.
So too.
Yeah.
So if you're reading in the forums about people complaining that their D80s are blowing highlights, it's because the matrix metering is
right.
biased a little
now,
bit to
ironically,
the right.
Ironically, a lot of times they feel like they get better... they have less noise.
Correct.
Too. And guess what?
Those things are related.
There's a correlation, yeah.
So my matrix metered shot and my center weighted meter shot, just when I was in this situation, I was at 1600 ISO shooting at f2.8, which for most of us is as wide open as you could get, you know, if you have a 2.8 lens. And I think the matrix meter said 1/90th of a second. But when I spot metered and opened up a stop, I was really shooting at 1/40th of a second. Now, the good news was is that when I shot that way, the image was much nicer. It had a lot more color in it. It had a lot more detail in it. It just looked a lot cleaner. The problem is not a lot of us could really have handheld even at 1600 ISO, handheld an 85 millimeter lens at 1/40th of a second and gotten a sharp image. I was using my tripod to get that. So you can understand the predicament that you're in. We tend as just psychologically to try, we'll cut corners to try to get a higher shutter speed.
I've done this a bunch of times.
I've done it too.
It's always dumb.
You know, you'll point the camera at something bright and lock in the exposure. Okay, that's great, because now I'm getting 1/25th
of
a second.
And you psychologically feel better.
You feel a lot better until you see the picture and it just looks
right.
like mud.
Yeah.
And that mud is the noise in the image, and then you have to worry about mitigating it. So try to get your exposure correct in the beginning. This is where a handheld meter can work wonders. You know,
if you're using it in the incident mode that we talked about.
It can work great. So otherwise, you'll still need to take a spot meter reading and then determine whether the subject is neutral or medium-toned or brighter or darker, mm-hmm. whatever, to get the right exposure. Now, assuming you've done all that, and you then bring the image into your post-processing program of choice, let me back up for a second. Your camera may be adding noise reduction to your image, depending on how you're shooting. There's a difference between JPEG shooting and RAW shooting. In JPEG mode, the camera tends to, well, it's going to bake in whatever noise reduction settings were in the camera. And I think by default, that's set to noise reduction is turned on at a sort of normal intensity. And
with some the newer cameras.
Yeah, and some of them might have a high intensity setting. I don't recommend using that.
Unless you've got a subject with just very few details.
Right. Because as we're going to see in a second, there's this sort of yin-yang relationship between noise and detail. And you can have one and not the other, typically.
Yeah, you can reduce noise, but you'll lose some details in the process.
So,
or you'll have details, but you'll get a little bit more noise.
Now, Rick and I both shoot RAW, which does afford some potential advantages, depending on how you convert the RAW. Because if you convert the RAW, whatever the noise reduction setting was in the camera, it's going to be... You can disable it altogether, or it just won't even be applied, depending on which RAW processor you use.
Mm-hmm.
And with some of the third-party RAW conversion, or RAW, not RAW, but some of the third-party noise reduction tools we'll talk about in a minute, you might get better results by giving it something to profile that has no noise reduction applied whatsoever to your image. If you're just shooting in JPEGs and you get above certain ISO values, the camera, even if it's turned off, even if noise reduction is turned off, the camera is still going to introduce some noise reduction to your images.
Yeah, and again, that's something that is appropriate just for the newer cameras. The older ones didn't even necessarily have noise reduction available within the camera.
Okay, so you start looking at your image, and we need to make our definition of what noise really is, because there's two kinds of noise. Mm-hmm. There's the noise in the traditional sense, and then there's different kind of noise, which is more prevalent in the current Nikon bodies. And the two kinds of noise are sometimes called chroma noise or chrominance noise, and the other kind is called luminance noise or luminosity noise.
Right. Now, the chroma noise or color noise is the thing where if you do zoom in on your image at that, 100% thing that we were talking about earlier, you'll see lots of little colored speckles that'll look a little bit like glitter on your image. And that's the chroma noise.
And this used to be, in the old days, really bad.
Yeah.
This was what noise was kind of defined as: red and blue sprinkles in your image. Mm-hmm. That just absolutely made it look strange.
Right. And that's actually pretty easy to get rid of.
Correct. And then the other kind of noise that you might see is something called luminance noise. And that's noise that doesn't have any color, but turns out it looks kind of like grain. And it's constrained to the luminosity channel, or the sort of, you can think of it as the black and white or grayscale part of your image. That's the part of your image that gives the shape and the detail and all of the, edge contrast. It comes from that channel. Mm-hmm. So if you've got grain in the luminosity channel or noise in the luminosity channel, you have to be very careful about the way you mitigate that, because destroying that's going to destroy, it's going to make your image look blurry.
Right.
The way that noise reduction works, no matter what tool you're using, effectively looks at the two different channels independently. It looks at the color channels and it looks at the luminosity channels. And what it does is applies a blur to those. Mm-hmm. You can blur the heck out of the color channels. And anyone who's more advanced and has ever played with the LAB color mode knows you can do this and still retain a fair bit of detail in your image.
Right. You might lose some color saturation in the process, but you really have to jack it up quite a bit mm-hmm. before that's a significant problem.
On the other hand,
color noise is pretty easy to get rid of.
It is. On the other hand, the luminance noise, as we mentioned, as you start mitigating that, the only way to make it go away is to apply effectively a blur to the luminosity channel in your image. And that makes things go real plasticky really fast. Mm-hmm. Makes them look real smooth, and you lose all kinds of edge detail. And so there needs to be a harmonious balance between how much but what your noise reduction settings are doing.
Mm-hmm. Inevitably, and we'll talk more about it later, that's where you get into the idea of, well, maybe I'll only do that in the areas where I'm trying to where I don't worry about preserving detail, like an out of focus background and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk more about that.
Now, there's a bunch of tools out there on the market, most of which are available as some of them are standalone, and other ones work also as a Photoshop plugin. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of image processing software might have some noise reduction tools built in.
And we'll talk about the more common ones.
So there's sort of the two players that were the major players about a year or two in the last couple of years were ones called Noise Ninja and Neat Image. Mm-hmm. And they both operate as Photoshop plugins or standalone. And they attempt to do the same thing. They offer you some control over how much of the color noise gets blurred and how much of the luminosity noise gets blurred. And you can try to come up with some sort of compromise setting, and you can create profiles, and it will analyze your image and try to come up with the best trade-off between completely blurring it out and right. preserving detail. And then lately, there's been some new players on the market. I know there's one that you like called Noiseware by Image mm-hmm. Nomic. I haven't tried it myself recently, but I hear it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then there's a new one that just came out by Nick Software, and that's Nick Define 2.0, which works as a Photoshop CS3 plugin now. Mm-hmm. And that's got some interesting things. They brought in the ability to use control points. Mm-hmm. Similar to what you have in Capture NX.
Right.
And if you do raw conversions in Capture NX, there's also a noise reduction tool in Capture NX that you can use with the same idea. You can control the intensity and then what they call the sharpness. And again, it's that trade-off. It's the balance between how much do you blur and how much detail in the luminosity channel do you retain. Mm-hmm. And it may differ depending on which ISO and how big the print is and, you know, the effect you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Now, what we're not going to do in today's podcast is, you know, a trade study on each of those tools. That would be, you know, another hour-long podcast.
Right. They all work pretty well and pretty similarly,
quite
frankly.
The key thing with all of them is learn how to dial them in. Take advantage of them. Get settings created or learn when the auto settings are appropriate and not.
Now, one thing I have discovered is that in a lot of images, the amount of noise reduction that I do, there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all setting. I might have a clean, out-of-focus background, which could stand up to tons of noise reduction because there's no detail in it, and I don't want any detail in it. So I don't mind just completely zapping out, you know, the luminance channel noise as well as the color channel noise. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if I apply that setting and I have a subject that has a fair bit of detail, and I always use the example of my dog because he's my number one portrait subject. Mm-hmm. Well, I've got detail and fur there that I want to retain. So if I just make a setting that's good for the background, well, then I've just completely, you know, it looks like I've taken my finger on, you know, and used oil pastels and just sort of smeared the portrait. So one of the things that's coming out in some of these newer tools is the ability to perform noise reduction selectively. And that's what Nick Sharpener does. And then if you are good with layers in Photoshop, what you can do is instead of applying the noise reduction filter directly to the background layer in Photoshop or the main image, what you do is you duplicate the background, create a new layer, and then do your noise reduction on that. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to use brushes and the masking tools, et cetera, to reduce the intensity and just paint out the noise reduction, or even apply multiple layers and say, I'm going to do one setting for the background in layer one and a second setting for the subject in another layer. And eventually you get very complicated, but quite professional noise removal because there is no one size fits all setting.
Right.
So that's kind of what we, and you can do this as well in Capture NX if you perform noise reduction in an edit step. So that allows you to do selective brush tools, and then you can apply another noise. You can apply as many noise reduction edit steps as you want in mm-hmm. NX. Mm-hmm. One advantage of doing it in your raw converter is that, you know, you're starting with the raw data and you can potentially get a nicer image, potentially, and keep your, retain your normal raw workflow.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just easier, too, to do it there.
Now, another thing, so that's the idea of noise reduction, and let's say you've dialed in that setting, but you're not done yet. You're not out of the woods, because there's a couple of things we have to address now, and that's post-processing to get the colors and the contrast correct, and then the sharpening approach you're going to take when dealing with high ISO images, because you're not going to use the same sharpening approach when dealing with a high ISO image. But let's start with post-processing. Rick mentioned a great point. When you start blurring the color channels, you lose saturation. Mm-hmm. Your image starts to look dull, maybe a little washed out. The colors just aren't there.
Not so, necessarily terrible, but you can see a difference.
It depends on the ISO that you're shooting at, et cetera. You'll definitely see a difference. So one thing you might want to do is boost the saturation. Mm-hmm. And I find something like a 10-point, you know, plus 10 works pretty good. Mm-hmm. Or even sometimes if you're in NX or if you have a camera that you can set the saturation sharpenings on the in-camera settings to enhanced, mm-hmm. that can help offset a little bit of the color loss that you mm-hmm. get from shooting in high ISO.
Yeah. And if you're using a tool, you know, like a raw conversion tool that has the vibrance slider in there and that's showing up on a bunch of them, mm-hmm. that can be probably the best way to do this boost, because it'll do it in a way that doesn't look too artificial and isn't too global.
That's right. Now, that's all fine and good for your color, but the most important thing that you want to do with high ISO images is try not to extract every last tiny bit of shadow detail.
Yeah, and I was mentioning how I first ran into this little tip. I was doing some bird photography down in the Everglades, and I was using my old D2H. And, you know, that was a camera that was a little bit noisier at the higher ISOs, not terrible or whatever, but just like a lot of earlier DSLRs, it had a bit more noise. And the mistake I made, you know, when I got home and I was doing the post-processing on these images, as I was, you know, trying to do that old technique of, you know, do my levels adjustment. So I was just touching the left-hand side of the histogram. And that means I was trying to preserve as much shadow detail as possible. The problem was that's where all my noise was in those shadows. And so I was creating these images that had far more shadow detail than anything I would have ever gotten with slide film or even print film. And I was getting tons of noise too in the process, and my images just lacked snap. So there were a whole lot of bad things happening. And the funny thing about this is I coincidentally was also playing with capture at the time because I was using ACR for a lot of my images at that point in time.
This is you're talking about the original Nikon capture.
The old thing. And I had it set to a normal tone compensation, which kind of whacked the shadows, and the images looked so much better than what I was getting out of ACR. I was like, what the heck is going on? And I realized I was just trying to keep too much shadow detail. So by adjusting the black point slider, you know, the shadow slider in ACR, and cutting off the left-hand side of the histogram, I got images that looked far better, printed better, and didn't have the noise problem.
Yeah, and if you're a JPEG shooter, that's a great suggestion. Set the camera tone curve to normal.
Right.
And chances are you'll get just a slightly better product out of the box. And then move that black point slider to the right on your levels adjustment.
Don't worry about losing some shadow
detail. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times I'll set that value from, instead of zero, I'll set it to 5 or 10, just depending on where the histogram ends. Mm-hmm. I'll take it to the end of the histogram and then go up 5 notches or so, you know, five levels from the end in to the right. Mm-hmm. And that helps because you don't really care about getting a lot of the shadow detail some of the time.
Yeah. Like I was mentioning, a lot of times, it's not just the noise. It's getting a good contrasty, snappy print.
Which brings us back to that whole idea of the destination of your image.
Right.
The other way to get rid of noise is not worry about noise reduction at all. It's just if you're not printing, if you're not displaying a large full-size image at 100%, instead you're doing something for the web, you know, you could probably get away with almost no noise reduction because simply the act of downsizing your image, you know, to like an 800 or a 1200 pixel wide, which is already bigger than most web images are in the first place, unless you're doing a heavy crop, that noise disappears.
Right.
It just all hides in there and you can't see it because the computer cannot render that kind of detail on the screen. So what might be completely acceptable or might be perceived as completely unacceptable for somebody when just looking at 100% may not matter at all if your destination is to publish this in a newspaper or for the, you know, online or make reasonable size prints. And by reasonable size, we're talking about anything from 12 by 18 on down.
Yeah.
It's only when you start getting really large prints that, and using very high ISOs, by that I mean like 3200 and up, that you can start running into some problems and seeing the issues in your prints.
Yeah.
So the last phase when you get all done with this is to adjust your sharpening routine.
Yeah. And, you know, a long time ago now, we did a podcast that had a lengthy topic on sharpening.
Another
and
snoozer.
And we briefly talked about noise reduction in that one. So now, since we're talking about noise reduction, we have to briefly talk about sharpening because they really are related.
Right. And let me start with something that's really quite interesting.
At least we hope it is.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I saw this the last few days playing with my high ISO images. And that is, normally when I shoot an image at ISO 100 and I bring it into Capture NX, I turn off the in-camera sharpening setting. I set it to none, which I always do anyway.
Yep.
Just because I get more
Me
control
too.
With the USM. One of the things that does is helps mitigate noise up front because, you know, you don't want to sharpen up all that, you know, gritty detail. You want to let the noise reduction tool work first and then sharpen after that's done. But what I noticed is I'd remove the color noise. I would keep the luminance noise at a normal level, you know, because it just kind of looks like film grain mm-hmm. from the film days. And let me just point out before I go on that, speaking of film grain, I have done scans of ISO 400 slide film and compared them to what I get from ISO 800 and 1600 from my D2X. And the 800 and 1600 is cleaner than the 400 speed slide film yeah. ever was.
Now, if you're talking scan print film, that's really nasty stuff. You know,
so
when you look closely in there.
So again, reality check time. It's not that we don't want clean images across all ISOs, but compared to what we used to get, we're still in a world where what we're getting out of our digital cameras, even the older ones, is far better than what you'd right. ever get with film. Right. But anyway, one of the things about grain is that my images started looking pretty sharp, and I hadn't done any sharpening to them. I'm like, well, these don't even look that bad on the screen. Mm-hmm. What's going on here? Well, I remembered that it's the grain effect that gives that grittiness, it gives a perception of sharpness. We've talked about in the past, people actually adding film grain effect right. back in to make your image look a little sharper. Well, that means you don't need to sharpen as aggressively if you have this luminosity noise in your image.
Right. And you should also think about whether or not you really want to reduce all of that luminosity noise.
Right, because that's going to make your image turn to mush.
Yeah.
Real fast. Well, you still probably want to sharpen up your image, but what you're looking to sharpen up is not minute details at the pixel level, but you want to sharpen the major edges. You want to bring back shape. Mm-hmm. You want to define edges. If there's text in your image, you know, who knows mm-hmm. what your picture was of. And what I found works really well is to use what we talked about before, which is the high radius, low amount sharp USM unsharp mask settings. Mm-hmm. And also dial in a higher threshold than you would as well.
Right.
So that what you're basically telling the program to do is sharpen edges that have a lot of contrast between them and ignore subtle differences. And those subtle differences, or chances are those are going to be your film grain effect or any other noise that might be in your image. So for Photoshop, one starting point that you could play with would be something like an amount of 75, a radius of 4 or 5 pixels, and a threshold of 15 levels. That's going to give you some definition to to the shape, but it's not going to just make your image look speckly again.
Right.
You're not going to bring it out. If you're using Capture NX's unsharp mask tool, the setting that I like to start with is something in the 15, 25, 15 range. Mm-hmm. That's again, 15 amount, 25 is the radius, and then in NX, the radius is a percent. Mm-hmm. So that works pretty well. Again, those are starting points. You might need to dial back the intensity depending on the image, because it's going to depend on different ISO settings. As you go higher ISOs, you might want to use lower intensities, just because otherwise you start picking up stuff that you don't want to see.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk briefly about some real-world examples that we were both working with over the last day as preparation for the podcast. And we can talk a little bit about the tools, basic settings.
Okay.
In the approach.
You go first.
Okay. All right. So what I did, knowing that you would talk about NX, I focused on Lightroom, and the same things hold true for ACR within Photoshop CS3 because they work the same. Mm-hmm. They've got the same sliders and everything. And just a quick thing, if you haven't looked at those tools recently, and by that I mean the ACR 4.1 and the Lightroom 1.1, there really are some very cool new features in there that relate to sharpening.
Dana, it was Rick who said cool first this week.
All right.
To respond to your email.
But they are cool. Now, what I did is I took an image that I took up at Rocky Mountain National Park of an elk, and it was a day where it was a little bit overcast, and I was shooting at ISO 800, which is kind of on this threshold where things start getting a little bit noisier. And those new sliders in those products for sharpening allow you to do... Well, let me talk first about the noise reduction, what I did. I first started adjusting the color noise, and I just went up to 100% because you won't see the effects unless you are at 100%. Nothing will happen on the image. So I zoomed in and dialed in right around, I think I was using 15, 25, something like that on the color noise reduction setting. And I just adjusted it carefully until I saw the speckles go away. And then I did nothing more than that.
And if your experience is like mine, the color noise is actually handled really well.
It is.
With Nikon cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not a lot of it.
No, it's not bad and it's easy to dial out. So I did that first. And then what I started doing was just a very small amount of the luminance noise reduction. I think I was using something around 10, which is not a tremendous amount. Just enough to take off some of the noise, but preserving detail. And then, because I wanted something that was quick and easy to do, I decided to do my sharpening within Lightroom as well. And like I was saying, it's got some new sliders in there. And like you were mentioning, I went with a little bit lower intensity setting. I was using something around 25 or 35. This was an elk where I wanted to have a lot of detail preserved in its coat. So I did that a little bit higher radius than I normally would do. For landscapes, I'll use something that's around 0.6 or 0.8, a low radius. So for this, I think I took it up to about 1.5. And then I started using the other features in the tool that are new. There's a detail setting and then a masking setting. And I wanted a fair amount of detail, so I moved that up a little bit. But then I used the masking feature to not apply sharpening to areas that were lacking detail. And in this case, that was the out-of-focus background behind this elk. And so I moved that up to a fairly high setting, the masking parameter up to around like 75 or so. So I wasn't sharpening the out-of-focus background. But I was sharpening the elk's coat. And you can actually do a little trick by holding down, I think, the Alt key on a Windows.
And the Option key on a Mac.
Option key on a Mac. When you're at 100%, you can see exactly what it's masking out. Works great. And so did that. Made sure I didn't have too much shadow detail, like I was mentioning. Printed it on 13 by 19 paper. Looked wonderful. Believe me, no one in their right mind is going to look at that print and say, oh, it's really noisy. It doesn't look that way at all. It looks sharp as heck.
That's the proof.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is the final test, is if the people who, the audience who that image is intended for, like it, what the heck does it
and
matter?
Honest to God, no one would ever look at that print and say it was noisy.
And
happen.
I bet you even if you hadn't done all that stuff, it probably would have still come out pretty reasonable. Yeah.
But they were easy things to do, so why not?
Well, I did some stuff as well with 1600 on the D2X. And for those of you who have a D2X and not a D2XS, I recommend getting the firmware update to, was it firmware 1.1 or 2.0?
I don't remember. It was a while back.
It came out last year, actually. One of the features that it does is it took a page from the D200 playbook, and it allows you to increase above ISO 800 in third of a stop increments or half of a stop, depending how your camera's set, which means you can go high plus 0.3, which is the equivalent to ISO 1000. That works really well.
Mm-hmm.
You get that little extra speed, but you don't really lose a lot of color detail. But for the sake of argument, I was shooting at ISO 1600 because I wanted to see what it would do. And as Rick mentioned, I had my still life picture that I tried this morning. I also had a photograph of my golden retriever, which I did outside. And, the sun was already just about down, so it was just kind of, faint light shooting at ISO 1600. I had a clean background because I used a sort of telephoto lens on it. And what I did was I opened the image, and of course, the first thing I do in NX is, like I said, I set the in-camera sharpening to zero, to none, turn that off completely. Because the last thing you want to do is be sharpening stuff before you've even blurred, those two things work against each other. The second thing I did was, because I was shooting above ISO 800, even though noise reduction was turned off in my camera, Capture NX still detected the high ISO and applied a little noise reduction. The way I turned that off is to not uncheck the little check mark and bass adjustments next to noise reduction, but I actually go in there and set it to zero. I set the intensity to zero. Then there's no question that it's off. It won't pop back on by mistake or anything like that. So now I've got nothing on. Then I added a noise reduction edit step in NX. So this is outside of the bass adjustments. And when you bring that slider up, you get, well, when you bring that edit step up, you get two sliders. One is amount, and the other one is sharpness, or I think intensity and sharpness. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly. If you want to see a picture of what various combinations of settings look like, there's a two-page illustrated matrix of all these different combinations in my NX ebook, actually, where you can do compare, you know, see how the sharpening slider affects it at any given setting from 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. And normally in the past, I've always just kind of dialed in a setting of like maybe 17 or 20 and set the sharpness at 5, and that gives me a pretty good result. I tried something a little different and it was kind of interesting. It gave me some different control, and this is interesting, so I thought I'd share that with everybody. I set the quality mode to better quality from the in the edit step, and then I used a much lower intensity setting than I normally would have. Instead of using something in the 25 range for ISO 1600, which is, I think, is what the default would be from the camera, I use a setting of 17. And then I set the sharpness to zero. So immediately when I looked at the image, of course, it went pretty soft. But I did this to retain some softness in the background, the out-of-focus areas. And then if you're in NX, or if you're sharpening in a layer in Photoshop, same, you can... There's a little checkbox by opacity, and you can click that and it opens up a new dialog box. And in the opacity window, you have some options. The first option, there's a pull down menu for where it says all, and that's the how does it do it? Which channel do you apply the opacity to? And by default, it's everything. But the one of the options is luminance and chrominance, which is what we're talking about. So I selected that option. So then instead of getting one opacity slider, I got two opacity sliders, one for the color channel and one for the luminosity channel. I left the color channel at 100 because that's the noise I wanted to get rid of. And then I dialed down the luminosity opacity. And what that does is it allows some of that grain to start coming back through into your image again. And so it brought back some of the detail. It brought back some of the grain.
And using opacity is a nice way of being able to fine-tune the amount.
Right.
It's a little bit easier than the other.
Yeah, the sharpness setting in the NX tool gives you 10 discrete settings, 0 to, well, actually 11, 0 to 10, right? You can go from that in that entire range in one step increments. If you use the opacity slider, you can do anything from 0 to 100. And so I started with a setting of 50 and then just fine-tuned it to taste. And I think I ended up with a setting of around 75 or 80. So I was still getting rid of a fair bit of luminosity noise, but I was letting some of that grain peek back through. And then I went and did my sharpening routine with the USM setting of 15, 25, 15 after I had already adjusted levels and saturation, et cetera. And the image came out pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. And another thing you can do if you're doing the sharpening in NX, like we mentioned earlier, is if you choose to, you can use the selection brush tool, paint out or paint in noise reduction. So one thing I did on a different print was I did a noise reduction step that was very aggressive. I painted it onto the background, but left the picture of the dog alone. And then I used the noise reduction step that just got rid of the chroma, the color noise, and painted that onto just where the animal was. And that worked out pretty nice. And I showed you that picture, and your first impression was that it looked pretty darn good.
It looked great.
And I printed it out at 12 by 18, and I took it up to the ultimate judge, which is my wife. Because if it's a picture of the dog, she wants to approve it. And she thought it looked great. And I brought it into work and I put it up in my cubicle. And everyone said, hey, that's a great picture. No one said, hey, that looks a little noisy. Did you shoot that at high ISO? So the proof, again, is the final output.
Yeah. And that gets us down to the final thing, which is we've given you a lot of obsessive compulsive tips for eking out the last bit of detail and reducing noise. But again, start off by making some prints at reasonable sizes. You may not really have much of a need to go to this level of pain that we just described. You might get prints that you absolutely love, and so does your family.
And just remember,
without doing it,
you don't shoot in the dark at 1/1000th of a second. It doesn't happen.
Right.
You just won't ever get a good picture that way.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about I think we're done with that topic.
Yeah.
I think hopefully, if you're still awake with us at this point.
Crispy crunch or something like that.
If you haven't driven off the road or driven off a cliff or something like
or Mount Evans.
Yeah, don't listen to this on Mount Evans.
Yeah.
We'll give you our photo prescription of the week, and that is for a sharpening technique called high-pass sharpening. And you can do this in Photoshop, which is the first place I saw it applied, and you can do it in Capture NX. And it's a neat technique, and it relates to this noise reduction topic because it's another one of these sort of high radius, low amount. It's going to find contrast, major areas of contrast, strong edges, and it'll leave alone tiny little details like noise. And so it's an interesting sharpening approach. And the way that it works is if you're in Photoshop, you go to Filter, and I think it's under Other, and there's a filter called High Pass. And if you select that, the first thing that you'll see is that everything turns funky gray, and you might see strange shapes coming through that look like the edges of your image. I think by default, there's one slider for High Pass. There's one slider, and the slider is the radius. And what you want to do is you want to set that radius to about 1 pixel for starters. And values between, depending on your image, values between 1 and 2.5 or 3 pixels is the most you'll use. And what you'll see is that in the areas where there's some contrast, the gray will sort of disappear and you'll start to see details of your image kind of like poking out from underneath. Mm-hmm. Then what you do is you don't leave it like this because it looks just like this funky gray embossed kind of image. What you then do is you change the opacity to overlay. So in Photoshop, it's best to do this in a layer. It doesn't work if you just do the filter on the main image. So you would duplicate your background layer, create a new layer from the background, apply the high pass sharpening filter to the new layer, and then set the opacity from the layers palette to overlay. And the next thing you know, you'll start, you know, it'll look like your picture again. And this overlay mode allows the contrast edges to peek through. And it sharpens the image. And it does it in a way that can affect sort of local contrast. You know, you can have fun with this. But it brings out large shapes, not fine detail, depending on how you have it set. You can do the same thing in Capture NX. You go down into the focus menu from the, I think it's, you know, edit, and then you go focus, and it's the same place where you got unsharp mask and Gaussian blur, and then there's also high pass. And in NX, by default, it's applied into an edit step, so it's like a layer. So you don't have to worry about creating a layer. And then you do the exact same thing. You get the same slider. You get the radius slider, which you can set to between 1 and 3, and then just go into the opacity, open up that box where it says opacity, and then change the mode from normal to overlay. And then it does the exact same effect. Mm-hmm. And it works pretty well. And in fact, I was using that in place of USM sharpening, or in addition to USM sharpening in some of my high ISO images as a first pass. And then I did unsharp mask after I did the high pass step. And you just have to play around with it, but it can work quite well.
Good.
Anything else?
I think that's enough.
Oh yeah, I think we've had about enough. Okay, well, thanks everyone for joining us. Don't forget, send us your topic requests to talkradio@nikonians.org. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
All right, bye-bye.